You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 4th of January to the 10th of January 2021. And not including the thing that I promised last week, because I still haven't finished watching it. Cute executive officer. I was thinking...
For shame.
I should do that as a running gag for the entire year. Never managed to finish watching a half-hour anime.
Some kind of Mandela effect where the whole world believes that it actually exists.
Instead, we're going to start off with the anime of the year. It's Pui Pui Molcar, episode 1. Who caused this traffic jam?
Usually come in pretty early, like Aizouken was pretty good last year, you know, yes. That was really washed into the top, this going out early.
So this is a show that I was first aware of when like one or two people on my Twitter feed seemed to be mainly Transformers fans were mentioning in it. I don't know.
I can see the appeal if you're a Transformers fan. They're cars.
They're cars, yeah.
Yeah.
Of a flesh transformer. Yeah.
Oh, they're beast transformers. It appeals to all kinds. Yeah.
And then I clicked on the hashtag and I was like, okay, that's an awful lot of fan art for a show that only started last Monday.
Well, just the spreads like the rodents in question.
Yes. So, what is Pui Pui Molcar, apart from being the hottest anime in Japan at the moment? It is a 2.5-minute show, which is stop-motion animation, and it is all about guinea pigs who are also cars, or cars who are also guinea pigs. Let us not bother with the logistics. They are living cars, but they also, people drive around in them. And they are also guinea pigs.
Under the people's control, but they're also under their own control because they are guinea pigs.
Yes. Yes. And the first episode follows a lady trying to get to work, and she's stuck in a traffic jam, and she's wondering, why am I stuck in this traffic jam of guinea pigs? And then we pan to the front of the queue. It's a red light, but it turns green, and then the guy doesn't move. And we zoom into that particular guinea pig. A guinea pig has got like massive speakers on the outside of it. And it's a guy who's on his mobile phone, his feet up inside the guinea pig. And then the camera cuts to when he's on his phone and he's just hitting like on a video of a real life guinea pig.
That's a good game. Yeah, I
can
see that.
And then an ambulance guinea pig pulls up behind the lady. And it's not the lady who's concerned. It's the guinea pig that she's driving in is concerned about how worried this guinea pig ambulance is. And we see there's a woman in a bad state in the back of the guinea pig ambulance with her husband, presumably.
I like how it turns around the show because the window is on its arse, so it has to show its arse to appear in at this harrowing scene of like the husband on over, like, no, she's holding, gripping the hand in his vigil.
Also, it's not like you said, it's not the woman reacting to this. It's the guinea pig car going like, oh no!
Yes. And so the guinea pig thinks about it and the ambulance climbs over the top of the guinea pig and along the queue of traffic, and then the lady's guinea pig follows the ambulance, and then the next guinea pig follows that guinea pig, and then it's just every guinea pig in the queue of traffic tramples over the guinea pig at the front, who then kicks the driver out and runs away, and then the driver gets arrested by the police.
Who are also guinea pig cop cars.
More on them
with
next
a little
week.
Sheriff badge on the side.
Yeah. More with the guinea pig police cars next week. Man, but the thing is, the real appeal is just how well it's animated and the stop motion and the charm of it all.
It's that what do you call that wool craft where you stab it with a pin?
Yeah, it's like felty. It's I can't remember what it's called. My mum does it. No, it's like because I keep having to buy her new picking needles because she breaks them. But yeah, so the guinea pigs are that, but the people, when they're outside the cars, are like little miniatures. But when they're inside the cars, they're real people, but they're stop motion as well.
Stop motion photographs.
Yeah, yes, stop motion photographs. And the little people, they obviously remind you of a town called Paddock, if you've seen that, because they're also all miniatures in that, which is a great thing to be reminded of.
If you don't know a town called Paddock, they did commercials for butter or something like that.
It was for milk, because they just the only word they would say is milk. I was trying to explain a town called Paddock to Shane because he hadn't seen it, but I was just like, oh, they did like some milk commercials, and it's like, I don't know about that. And then I, as soon as I put it on, I was like, oh, I remember this, milk, milk, milk. And I was just like, yeah, everyone remembers it because they're funny.
Yeah. Thankfully, if you they put the second episode up on the Bandai Arts channel for a week. I don't know whether it's going to be a regular thing, but it is up under the Muse Asia YouTube channel, which I think you'll have to log in with a non-Japanese Asian country on VPN to watch the video.
It's and as well, it's whatever way you can get it, it's completely just silent comedy. You hear like guinea pig squeaky noises and the kind of the occasional, but it's completely, it tells a story itself.
It is universal.
And the noises are funny as well.
Like the director Tomoki Misato, it seems to be his medium. He loves like little making little felt things, and which feature guinea pigs in them as well. He must have a couple of them as pets in his time or something.
Yeah, he's only 28 years old. It was one of these things when I watched this and I went and looked at his Vimeo, because his Vimeo is bilingual, it's in English and Japanese, and it's got the trailer for his student film, and it's just laden with awards. And I was like, between that and this, I was like, I got the feeling of anything we've watched recently, this is the director most likely who we'll see getting some sort of Oscar, even be it short.
Get some Oscar
or short thing.
Yeah.
With this, like, they were smart enough to at least do the first one or two, like, worldwide, because, like, universal appeal with this. He's going to get attention. He's going to do fucking well, I hope, because this is fucking excellent.
Mm. Yeah.
That's good. It's got a lot of range as well. I mean, this is, like, all very charming. It's very cute and adorable, but what was, like, better known works. It's like a retelling that it's not a tree Billy Goat's Gruff. It's like the mother goat goes away, the wolf comes and eats the three kids. Then the mother goat finds that wolf, cuts the wolf open and rescues her kids. They put stones in the wolf and throw them into a river.
Yeah.
It's all done in a very kind of dark fairy tale style, but still in the medium of like this stop motion felt figures.
It's still cute as heck.
And it's funny when he gets in there when they're, you know, cutting that wolf open, it's fucking gruesome.
But I assume it's all like fluffy felt and it all looks great. Fluffy intestines.
All that, for the special effects. Lovely cotton wool, like cloud, like dust cloud when they're all rushing past the car in front.
Yeah, and that's his student film. That's the thing, is like. Can only get better. I absolutely love this. It blew my mind. It's 2.5 minutes long, which is the ideal length for anything.
No excuses.
Yeah. Then next up we've got Suddenly Egyptian God, episode 5. Suddenly Ra and Epep, and Suddenly Presence. In which Ra is heading home to see his children with a boat laden with presents, and Epep keeps on trying to stop him, but fails every single time. And this episode is entirely a joke which relies on you knowing what Egyptian gods these are and their relation to each other, because it's not going to explain it to you what the gag is, that Ra cannot be stopped because he's the sun and he returns every day. So no matter what, Epep, the god of, or the god representing god of chaos and destruction. It cannot be stopped. Yeah,
the god of chaos, he's trying to throw him off of his routine. Can't be done. He's the king.
I do like these historical animes that rely on knowing your mythology to get the jokes.
Also, for spotting the cameos going by, because there's just yes. there's just Sobek chilling out in the river. He's just drifting by.
Sobek and the faceless, nameless one.
Medjed.
It actually has a name. Yeah, and then they're hanging out at the end. Pretty fun.
Yeah, and they've all got t-shirts. That's what. He's so excited to give the presents, and they're so excited to get the presents until they actually open the presents and their t-shirts. And he's like, oh, you enjoyed them so much, I'll remember to bring you t-shirts again next time.
It's absolute of what did your aunt or uncle or well-meaning but less informed parent like gotten you for Christmas. It's like, oh, thanks. It's really nice. I wear it every day.
Because he's going through as he's ignoring FF. He's like going how he's talking to himself about how great these presents are, and they're even I can never pronounce it. The
Egyptogram.
That's it. Yes,
Egyptogrammable
for Bastet. And it's just t-shirts. Anyway, that's that. Not as good as Pooh Pooh Mokar, but certainly better than a lot of shots are. So.
Few things are. I mean,
that's true.
Like,
yes.
Even if it's a bit of a kind of dud, it's kind of like it's short enough. So yeah, you're grand.
Then get to the first thing I watched for this week, which was Heaven's Design Team, Episode 1, Idea 1. And this is the one I don't have the notes for, or the character names for, but we meet a brand new. He's been an angel for a while, but he's got a new job, and he's going to be the voice of God to communicate to. The design team that God has outsourced the design of animals to. And his first day on the job, and there's another angel there with him who also seems to act as the voice of God. The voice of God seems to be represented by them getting headaches, and they suddenly relay God's decision to me.
It's basically like a thumbs up, thumbs down from God in your brain. It's tough being a Metatron, yeah.
And spider then we get to meet the design team and the engineer who has to implement their ideas.
She's to knock together what do you call it? The
concepts. Rough
prototypes. This episode is basically just get an idea of most of the personalities. I think there's one who probably we don't get the Gothic Lolita one. We don't get too much of her.
Yeah, she doesn't get much to do with this episode, but everyone else gets a bit, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And by the credits, it looks like there's many more characters who we're yet to meet, including a devil of some kind. But it's very much about evolution on one hand, and it's about working in product development on the other.
Yeah, the people who thought this was about creationism and shit, it's like, no, it's like intelligent design. These things are designed very stupidly. Like, evolution is really fucking dumb and tries some weird shit. And also, product design, very dumb and tries some weird shit.
And my favorite is the oldest one of the team who designed the horse.
He got an award for designing the horse.
And then tries to work horses into every of his designs since.
Ah, he had one really good idea. That's a solid fucking animal, man.
And, it's just NSC adaptable. You can just like just do different things. You know, just add a little something here, take a little something there, which then happens later on with the fucking Mitsushima, who's like the very Steve Jobs. It's all about minimalism and forward thinking. We got to
fucking
smash
love
concepts.
That as well. Yeah.
First of all, we'll take the horse. We'll remove its rear legs and we'll remove its front legs. And instead
only
of having
one hole,
instead of having one hole for excretion and one hole for copulation, we'll turn it into a single hole. And that is how you get the snake.
I bring you the snake.
What if I told you animals don't need legs? Oh, whoa.
And then you got Katamori, who is like the most involved with designing the birds and various bird types. And then this fucker's going, the snake, it can totally climb trees and it eats bird eggs. And you swallow them whole. It's like, what's that fucking bullshit?
That was I knew from the opening, like, because it showed her with the secretary bird, and I was like, okay, I see where this is going. But I love that idea of like two people on the team trying to fucking outdo each other, just because like you're making me look like an asshole here. I'm specifically trying to fuck you over now with my newest bird, the Weaver bird.
Yeah.
Try eating these eggs, you bitch. Yeah, it's very funny.
Yeah, and all the while we also get introduced to Kimura, the guy who wants to eat everything, which thankfully to the Crunchyroll comments I learned that's a parody of Charles Darwin himself. He used to eat all the animals that he'd discover.
Yeah, let me write down this thing's general look, its behaviors, how it tastes.
Yes, which leads to him creating a new animal called the lively sausage.
Yes. No, don't worry. I filled it with I've forgotten the fucking chemical.
It's basically makes it spicy. It's a spicy sausage.
But birds can't taste spicy, so you need to give it some more poison, and they're just grilling it out in the fucking on the Galapagos test islands. So what do they do? This they get the giraffe, which is a nice thing. And again, you the viewer is like, I need something, an animal that can eat the leaves on the top of trees. That's the design parameters from God. And they're just like, your man's like, flying horse, gotcha. Okay.
I can't do that again, because also as well, you want to make a Pegasus. Well, you need this much muscle mass to beat those wings, and with calorie intake and how it processes it, it needs to be shitting 24/7. So do you want like a flying muscle horse that shits and everything? I don't think you do.
It's magnificent. pretty fun.
Yeah, because the thing is...
I love your man's design of the... It's like a sea worm of some kind.
Yeah.
The minimalist fucking worm that could extend itself and has these branches. It's like a... Is that an animal? It's like, yeah, it's an animal. It eats plant matter and stuff. And God also approves that, even though everyone thinks it's a terrible idea. It's like, yeah, that's a thing. It lives at the bottom of the sea.
Then we get the snake and the bird thing where it's like... it's the war. First of all, it's Kanemori and Unabara, I think. Kanemori's trying to design all
Mitsushima
the...
Mitsushima is the Apple, it's Steve Jobs.
Yeah, but I think Unabara's around because we're getting into his character for the next bit for Kimura and him. Yeah. And the
He's constantly hanging in the background. He was like, cool, let's try this new design. Oh, it died. Let's get to it.
I like him as well. He's a big, huge dude, but very, very timid.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fun.
He's a big things. So we get all the stuff where they're trying to make eggs, which the snakes can't eat. But it just leads to the actual birds not being able to get out the egg.
And dying inside the egg. And there's constant, like, if you don't like animals dying, this is not the show for you. But if you do like animals dying in comedic ways because they've been designed very poorly, then this is the show for you.
What if we give eggs legs so it can run away from snakes?
Because they do, that was the, and then they design a tree frog, isn't it?
It goes in numerous ways. And then the final part is the sausage, which leads to the anteater and the armadillo, and then that dinosaur showing up. Well, not a dinosaur, but a
giant
paleolithic
creature.
Yeah,
Gylopodon or something. Yeah.
Glyptodon. That's it.
Because he does the anteater. It's like, oh, this thing's badass. Look, it's going to take a defensive stance. And they're like,
it's
so
kind
cute.
Of adorable when it does that, though. No, it's going to kill you. It's going to maul you. No, it's cute. Sorry.
So he's worried that your man wants to eat his newest design, the anteater. So he designs an armadillo. And everyone's like, that's pretty good. That looks like this other thing we have. You might want to go this direction with it. And it's like this, gigantic fucking prehistoric thing. It's just like, not cute, though.
Yeah. The wellspring of this as well is that there are lots of weird-ass technical details that animals have. Because they go, when designing the giraffe, they explain, it needs this extra gland that's next so the blood doesn't rush to its head when it bends down for water. It's like, yes, it evolved that, but you gotta think, maybe someone that designed that and they figured it out in the testing process to install that gland in the head, so it won't do that.
And the other thing of it being about evolution is, they do say it was like, well, in this environment, it will need this thing, that kind of thing, where your man's trying to, like, a war of attrition between snakes and birds, and it's like, there's a lot of that in evolution.
I think the same thing as well from that saying that like a camel is a horse designed by committee. So I think it's kind of run with that turn of phrase as well.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you cannot wait to get the episode where try to come up with something and it might open the platypus. And it's like, what the fuck is this? You guys just got to throw out any old shit to meet the deadlines. Like,
I feel like that'll be the one that everyone gets a bit of input on. Can we make it poisonous?
What the fuck is this? It's venomous. This is absolute bullshit. I never approved this. Approved. Out it goes.
All right.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's not Kanemaru. It's Kimura who's there doing the bird part, offering advice and then going, oh, what about my frogs? They can escape the snakes. Because, yeah, that's the thing. It's basically like when the snakes burst the eggs of the frog, then the tadpoles then escape into the water.
Like they've got the jumping... Yeah. Evolutionary kind of thing. Like if they see movement even in the egg, they'll jump out of the egg. Like that's how programmed for running away they are. Yeah,
this was top notch, and I was like, oh, if this is the best thing I watch all week, great. But then there was a whole load of other things which were also really good.
That's a good complaint to have.
Not sure this one. I mean, the next thing is weirdly might be my favourite, but it might also be the worst thing I watched this week, and that is Back Arrow number one. Do guys from the sky have undies?
I wish they kept that title like to the end, because I thought this did a really good job of throwing you into thinking it's one kind of show, and then it's a different kind of show.
That's true, yes, because once you've seen the title... Which I guess you wouldn't have been able to escape from going to Funimation and seeing it there. As soon as you've got the, hang on, this is where my notes come in. What were all these things?
Oh, shit, okay.
Oh, I've spilt water all over the keyboard.
Oh, no.
Oh.
You have a towel on stream.
please stand by.
The Rakuho is the, so the we've got, the setup is there's these two countries in the world surrounded by the wall, and the wall provides for both of them. Excuse me while I shake out the water at my keyboard.
All right. It's very like a flat earth thing where there's like an infinite ice wall seemingly around what is the world. And there's two, main two countries, and one values science and the other values honor, I think they
said. One values intellect, the other values
strength.
Honor. I think it's honor, because
I think it's something beyond like just strength alone, because it was like honor, and it was very coming across, obviously, very like Japanese imperialism, that kind of thing.
I think it's supposed to be China.
I got a more kind of
You're right. It was
China,
probably Chinese,
Korea, North,
especially
very
with
imperial,
the feather fan. I think you're right.
Specifically, like Romance of the Three Kingdoms, because your fella Shibi seems to be the guy from the Romance of Three Kingdoms, but not Lubu, no, the strategist guy who's in Giant Robo as well.
That's lots of dudes.
But no, the one who's got the fan, the one who's manipulating the entire plot of Giant Robo.
That's right.
The master schemer.
There's a Republic of Rekka, which is the one we see, which is the China one. And then there's the Kingdom of Luto, who we don't see much of, to the point where the characters from there appear to be shadowed out in the opening at the moment.
When I was watching that opening, I was like, this is very fucking cheap looking. I was like, oh, it's for this joke that they're doing. Okay, that's okay.
Yeah, but the people who live there seem to be, the folks who we see in this one town anyway, maybe cowboys.
Yeah, they're not really from Luto, are they? They're from Iki. They're from the...
Oh, they're from like the
third... the third land,
they're
which isn't
out
claimed
the,
by either
in the
of
sticks.
Them.
Yeah. They're out in the sticks. Like, no one actually wants this land. It's actually hard to live off this land. It's all rocky and shit.
So, yeah, we see one of these Rakuos, which have been sent from the wall, being recovered by... what did I write his name down as? Kai. He's a big, strong lad, big red hair. He's got these. What are they called again?
Power band. There's a lot of terms.
There's a lot of terms.
Coil, warp binder, or something like that.
Bind warper.
That's it.
Yes. So he's got a bind warper, and they...
Well, also the thing that the pod that they have is filled with these. It's like, wow, look at all these bind warpers, and you're like, what's that? And then they immediately show you what it is, which is nice.
So he puts one on. The guys from Luto, one of them puts one on, and then they all put one on. But they're hang on, what are they called again?
What's it called?
Brihites.
Bryheights. Giant robots, I'm going to call them.
Their Bryheights aren't as big as Kai's because they don't have such strong convictions as Kai.
Yeah, so they all resemble the same thing, because presumably they believe in the power of their own military, but they don't believe in anything personally. Whereas his one is a representation of his own conviction.
Yeah,
or
I can't remember what he said.
Well, it just shows, because they put one on, they produce the exact same giant robot, this kind of plain yellow one. He's got like a cool like one, like crests and capes and a big halberd. He's going to mop the floor with them, which he does in prompt order.
He kicks their ass and takes all the bind warpers back.
And then there's a second pod crashing in, and your man was like, oh, this was part of my prediction that something crazy would happen, but this has never happened before.
Let's go on an adventure, me and my assistant, Ren. Mm. And, she begrudgingly takes him off on this adventure. He's going to land in Icky, which is, they're not supposed to go there because...
it's contested land.
It's contested, yeah.
It's contested / no man's land, whatever way you want to put it. Yeah.
And then we go to there and we see the sort of people who live there, which are very poor cowboys.
Chapless cowboys, cowgirls who wear no shirt but do wear a vest, all kinds of fun stuff. I did like the way the little brother wore exactly the same kind of a tied top that his sister did. I thought that was really funny.
Oh, I like the kid who's wearing the clearly adult's pair of trousers up to his neck.
That's also good. Yeah. Again, I like a lot of the designs in this, but it has the very thing of, here's the generic people in the village. They're all wearing like dungarees and like fucking bands over the shoulders kind of thing. But everyone else who's a main character is like, that's a main character. You can tell because they got a very nice style.
They're wearing colors.
Yeah, exactly. You could have just made the villagers colorful and it might have fixed it.
They recover the Rakuho, and the village elder explains that you can eat it. It's bounty provided by the wall, so get it cooked.
And we needed food, so that's probably what it's given us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because they've only managed to capture one horn hare. That was the animals they hunt. And so they're going to cook it until they're going to try to smash it open because they think it's cooked long enough.
It's cooked through. It's like a giant metal pod.
Yeah, this kid called Bit. Is cracking it open, and he cracks it, and then it opens up, and a naked man leaps out.
Kicks him in the face and says, what the fuck, dude? Why are you trying to cook me?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, this has been observed by Shubi and Ren, and they're very surprised that a man has leapt out and not more bind warpers.
Like, I know they have those, like, giant motorbike floaty things, but I was like, I wonder what the level of tech is, but because your man's just watching them with a binoculars and going like, oh, fuck, some guy came out. That's really weird. And your one has, like, a directional microphone. It's like, dude, let's just fucking find out what they're talking about.
It doesn't really fit in with their costumes.
Yeah.
He's, like, very imperial finery, and then bringing out the spy equipment. But I don't know. The Chinese empire was very advanced in this time. They come up with a lot of stuff way ahead of when we think.
And if they had giant robot armbands, then
that's anti cool.
So this man is like, I'm from beyond the wall, and I need to get back on the other side of the wall. And they're all like, where's your underwear? And he's like, I left it. It's the other side of the wall. I'm pretty sure. Oh, by the way, I don't remember anything else about myself.
I don't remember my name. I do remember I'm from the other side of the wall, and that's where my underpants is. So I need to get back there to get my underpants. Yeah. If that's cool with you guys, if you could point me the right direction. They're all laughing at him. It's like, dude, you can't go beyond the limits of the world. That's crazy. You're crazy.
I kind of like that reaction to it. I think when that kind of revelation is dropped, other times it's just like, horror was like, oh, it's forbidden to go beyond the wall, but it's this totally different kind of thing. It's like, who is this?
You can't
lunatic?
Go beyond the limits of reality.
That's the
idiot.
World out there.
Yes.
can't go past the world.
Shubi's like, interesting. This is fascinating stuff. But Ren's like, I'm going to kill this heretic. How dare he say there's something beyond the wall? But they're interrupted by a bandit who's after all those bind warpers, which must have been in that capsule. And so having to step up to defend the village is Atli, who turns out she'd gone off looking for her father's underpants to give to this man.
I fucking love that, because it's like, oh, father left this behind. And it's like, oh, this is an important artifact. It's like, no, it's precious like fucking jockstrap.
Yes.
If you could just cover your fucking junk with this, dude, I'd really appreciate it.
He never manages to put them on for the entire episode.
No. He actively throws them away at one point.
And she's pretty cool, but probably very stressed out because they're like earlier on, they're like taking a wagon train up the cliffs, and the kids are like, "Hey, Atlee, do we play with us?" And then one of them falls off the side of the cliff. She puts out the bull whip and just goes, whoosh, and whips him back. It's like, "Yay, do it again! Well, I'll play that game again, same time tomorrow." It's like, "Yeah, yeah, sure." She wants the fun, tell him to fuck off, but she's just too nice to be the sheriff.
I like the character where she's just like, she's super nice, and it's like, well, how is she going to be good at that? And even when she has her own conviction, it's like, I'll manage somehow.
Yeah, it's like, do what you need to get by or something, isn't it? Something along those lines. Yeah. Which allows her not to be able to be hit. But then the bandits is, don't let anyone run away, or never let anyone run away.
Like, destroy anyone who runs away, which means the more you try and get away from me, the stronger I get. Kind of thing.
Yeah, and he's trying to kill her because she's registered to the Bind Warper, so the only way he can take it, because they haven't got any to give him out of the capsule.
And they mentioned in the fight earlier between the two kingdoms, your man's killing him, and they're just like, I don't want to die! The robot bits get cut up, and then it dissolves, and their bodies are gone. So in this one, they explain, as soon as it's on your arm, it's registered to you. When it's off your arm, it's not registered to you. But when it's on your arm, if you kill the robot, you kill the driver.
Yes, and then you can take...
But then you can just take the thing. That's the one thing that remains from them dying.
Because they were trying to get her to turn back again, because you could do that. You could do that, but he was preventing her from doing it, because she couldn't... Because basically it's like imitating your movements. So by holding your arms apart as the robot, you can't actually move your arm to pull it off again.
Yeah.
Our mysterious stranger goes back to the capsule and finds one hidden in the seat of the capsule, and they're like,
cool, just give him that and he'll leave us alone. And he's like, as thanks for that jockstrap, which I've refused to wear, I will save you with this. And he puts it on in a very stylish way that I assume they're going to reuse as animation.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I like that he doesn't do it in the same way the others did, because the others were like throwing it up and putting their and letting it drop onto their arms and things, and he just like slams it onto his arm, and they're like, "What's your convention?" Then he transforms, beats the shit out of the guy. The guy runs away from him, and the guy chases after him, but his fists of his robot just go straight through this guy's robot, and he loses. The robot's destroyed, but he doesn't die. And oh yeah, then they're like, "What's your conviction?" And they're like, don't know. I got one, a conviction.
So I'd punch him.
And they're like, what do they say to him that he mishears and decides he's going to call himself Back Arrow?
Oh, it's very clumsily translated. But
yeah, it's like you this fucking blunt arrow of a guy here. Yes. And I was like, I don't think that was the worst mistranslation, but yeah, I will call myself Back Arrow, and it's like, that's not what we said.
It's a bit Colin and Fun Back Arrow. Like, no, yes. Like a giant fool. It's like, yeah, that sounds cool. Cool spy name. I'm Back Arrow. Okay, dude.
So that's where we're at. You can definitely tell it's Nakashima writing it, because it's just this big, glorious idiot of a hero who's going to win by being an idiot.
I don't know what my conviction is. It will change episode to episode, and that's the best conviction of all.
Nice degree. It's the world's not overly complicated, despite the fact that I had to write a bunch of things down to remember the terms. It's actually a fairly simple world, because it's only got these two countries to worry about.
It's going to throw, like, I imagine most of the terms this episode, and then you're kind of like, yeah, you're caught up, you're good.
Yeah, it'll just be new names we have to run into. Going long.
Goro Taniguchi, though, so it depends which Goro Taniguchi we get. Is it going to be sensible?
I feel like no, based off this episode.
No.
It's an interesting thing, though, you know, whereas the ability of the robot that they summon would be directly tied to this very inherent character trait. So I kind of like I can foresee a lot of like fun bullshit. Rationale for why my conviction is better than yours.
Yes.
By some kind of legal judo, it means I'm better.
I'm hoping they manage to do something fun with it, because they're taking like that vague concept and making it into a tangible physical powers. I'm hoping there's just like, your conviction's really good in every situation, except against this one conviction where it kind of sucks.
I'm hoping for like a new Soap Star scenario where, like in One Piece, where the villain who can drain away all our self-esteem and leave him helpless can't beat Usopp, because I have no self-esteem. And he's invincible.
Yeah.
So something like that would be cool.
Which may be where they're going with the guy, that the idea that he doesn't have, Back Arrow doesn't have any convictions. And so they've become this world where everyone's so focused on their convictions, and they're deliberately developing convictions in order to power these robots, that having a weirdo show up who doesn't breaks the rules they've established for themselves.
Yeah, like very much so the outsider changing the system, because it's not only like you have to have a conviction to run this thing, and your conviction is your power, like literally your fucking power. And there's like country A and country B, and it's just like, what do you support? Nothing. I'm just trying to get my pants back.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get back on the other side of the wall. And obviously, that's going to be the key. Is like, what is on the other side of the wall?
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's not amazingly animated. It's probably, like I say, it's the worst thing this week in terms of its animation, I think.
Yeah.
It depends where you sit with CG robots. You know, can you, like, get by with them? I've seen CG robots done a bit better than this, to be perfectly honest, but they're not terrible.
None of my problems lay with the CG robots. It was more the character work of some of the humans and some weird, like, cheesecakey posing.
Yep.
That I was like, does this have a plot point, or did a pervert just animate this particular scene?
It's got to be a four quadrant hit. We're going to keep reaching for that every episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then we've got Skate to the Infinity, episode one, Snowfall on a Hot Night.
So hard boiled.
You know those animes where, like, the thing that the anime is about is the most important thing in the world?
Yes.
When it does it good like this.
I think this is the all round the best thing this week, apart from Poo.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
It just so nails skateboarding. In terms of a cartoon, but also not necessarily presenting it realistically, presenting it as a cartoon.
Yeah, presenting it in the style of a cartoon, sure.
It focuses around the underground skateboard race known as S, of which our hero is a big fan of. He takes part, and before the credits, he's taking part in it, and he's fighting against a guy called Shadow, who is the sort of jerk who is clearly going to have a babyface turn down the line when he comes face-to-face with somebody actually evil and not just a jerk.
Yeah, he's your very Buggy the Clown type character. Yes. I don't just mean the clown makeup.
He's more like Krauser from Detroit Metal City if he was skateboarded instead.
Yeah. I could see that.
Reki, our hero, he's racing him because of an earlier grudge between them, where it set fire to his skateboard, I believe.
I thought that was the penalty he had to pay at the end of this
race. I can't remember.
Because, like, you have to put something up for stakes when you do one of these grudge races in the... I've forgotten what that's called in Tony Hawk's, with the levels where you, like, it's entirely downhill. that race.
Basically. That race, yes. But that is essentially what this sport is, going entirely downhill through a mine, an abandoned mine.
And it's a super secret race that you need a sticker invite to.
Yes, if you've not been, if you go there the first time.
When you roll up there, it's a total like illegal street race scene. You got guys pulling up in their tricked out skateboards, got all the ladies. It's very like Fast and the Furious style job, but they're all on skateboards.
This has the opposite problem to Back Arrow, where a lot of these guys, I was like, are these all important characters? Are those four women on the one skateboard? Is that a thing? Or is that just one random thing in the background? I don't fucking know.
It reminds me a bit of Tokyo Tribe in that respect, of like everybody getting a character design. So this is before the credits. He loses this match when Shadow throws firecrackers at him. Which makes him bail, and then is he broken his arm or wrist?
He's injured his arm anyway.
Like his arm wrapped up by the end of it, so I'm guessing it's at least sprained. Yeah,
because they get the credits where we get to see a load of people who are very anime, particularly the guy who's clearly the villain, who's a masked skateboarder.
There's a masked, like, probably like multi-millionaire executive skateboarder. Would also be a vampire?
Quite possibly, sure. Yes. He's definitely the guy who we see towards the end of the episode who's watching the ongoing events shirtless while playing classical music.
Just, I'm glad he was wearing pants at least. Like, he didn't make it into, yeah. He didn't make it weird.
There's so many dudes are, and he's not the only businessman skateboarder as well. We see like a Saturday man coming down from a hard day at the office, goes to his locker, and he's like, he's got the suit and tie on, he's open. The locker's got his sweet boar with the flaming skulls in the insides. Oh, yes, he's going to go. That's some steam after work.
At the illegal skateboarding ring. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, we also meet the artificial intelligence developer and businessman who's also a skateboarder on his evenings off. Yeah, so he's at school and there's this new student showing up who is Langer. Who it turns out is from, who's moved here from Canada with his Japanese mother, and he's been moaning that there's no snow in Okinawa. And wouldn't you know it, by the end of the episode, he's skateboarding
with the best of them.
With the best of them.
Because he's from Canada, he must have had a snowboard, so by extension, yeah, he must have had a skateboard.
Yeah, if it's actually Canada, that's probably what you would have, like, you'd have both. But apparently this guy was just into snowboarding. I did like the thing of, like, I thought it maybe not necessarily worked the plot together to get him involved in it, like, naturally, but it was very funny. Like, the thing of he just wants to get a job where he gets loads of money.
Yes.
Accidentally applies to
Cherry Blossom is his calligraphy AI company.
Sorry, there's an age limit on my calligraphy AI company. You can't join. He's like, damn, that had a really good hourly wage. And, you know, he meets your man. He's talking to the boss and he's like, hey, can I get a job there? And it's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, and even the boss doesn't have a good story. He's like, oh, I can't send you because your arm's broke. And I can't go because I got shit to do. And it's like, it's a woman. And it's like, no, it's not a woman. And he's like, actually, the shop's shutting down. He's like, really? No. Ah, fuck you. No, drama. I have a Fennec for no reason. It's fine. Yeah. Everything's
and
fine.
He hires Langer just because he's got the suitable driving license.
You got a driver license, right? Yeah, yeah, okay. Cool, that'll do. You'll need this special sticker, which we need to get from a cool fucking dude walking down the street like it's a drug deal or something.
Yeah.
that's hey, the man. Only awkward bit. Mm.
Hey, man, is Kate going on? Is Kate going on? Well, yeah, man, I'll hook you up. Here.
Because yeah. they're supposed to be going because they're delivering a new skateboard to a guy who's got a race with Shadow, and Reki is in a rush and he brings the wrong skateboard. He brings his old beaten up skateboard, and so the guy wants to force Reki to race Shadow because
it's an old beaten up thing, and Shadow said it's like, okay, the penalty this time is you get to say what tattoo the other person gets, and I'm gonna get like your girlfriend's a slut or something tattooed on you.
I thought he was gonna get her tattooed.
Oh, that was the bit. Okay,
I think that was it,
Okay. But your man was kind of like, I don't want to fucking lose this. One of you guys needs to take my place because you fucked up my delivery.
And he's like, oh, whoa. And then we turn around and Langer's taped his feet to the skateboard.
Yeah, he did try skateboarding earlier and he did the classic thing of trying to stand on it rather than trying to move on it. If you stand on it, you will fall the first time at least. So he's like, I'll just tape my feet then. That way I can't possibly fall off. It's the perfect thing.
And the problem is,
but obviously, as well, if you figured it out by now, that's the way your feet are on a snowboard.
Snowboard, yes, locked in place.
Yeah, but that means he can't actually start the race because he's got no way to push himself.
I thought someone was
going to
give him a push, but he starts pushing himself with his hands. And once he gets a bit, everyone laughing, but once he gets a bit of speed going, we get this is all like live stream, so everyone at the race can watch it. It's not like you're standing at the start line. It's like you don't get to see how the race ends. It's like, no. They got drones or something. It's not explained. Who cares?
Yeah. But skate mine. That's just the.
We got our like Joker looking dude going like, "Hey, how come no one's looking at all the sweet tricks I'm doing?" And everyone's just like, "Oh, he's catching up," and it's like, "He's not going to catch him," and he is catching up.
Yes. Dun, 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 dun. And then he overtakes him, and then they get into. He's like, "Ah, it's not all downhill. They've also got to go through a warehouse where there's a whole lot of stuff you can grind on," and but he figures that out as well.
Like, he's figuring it out as he goes, and it's the thing of he's doing like snowboarding moves, like moving along the edge of the board, but when he's hopping back up, he forgets that, oh yeah, this thing has wheels on it, I forgot. So it kind of messes up his jumps a little, but yeah, other than that, he's got the skills.
Yeah, that particular one turn was very snowboardy rather than skateboardy that he did. Yeah.
You can almost imagine the flurry, the spray of snow coming out to the side.
There's such nice skateboarding and technically snowboarding animation in this. They clearly like studied it with great care. It looks gorgeous.
More eagle-eyed viewers than I, who would recognize this probably from watching the sport, they were saying that like, even just the way he was moving, even practicing on the board early in the episode, was very like a snowboarder would move. So before he even gets onto the thing and presses properly, he's it's all hinted. Again, if you hadn't figured it out from the photos and him being from Canada, you get it.
And his shadow tries his tricks again, but it does not work, and it just makes it look it's snowing as he lands.
I presume based off the next episode preview, he landed on his face or something because he looks kind of busted up.
I do love that the end credits are basically just a Bale compilation of all the characters.
Yeah, so good. Totally. It's like, hey, see this stylish guy? Watch him fucking faceplant in this. Funny.
Also individually name each Bale as well.
Yeah, yes. That's fun. Named after someone who uploaded it to make themselves look stupid, I guess. Everyone gets hit in the nuts at least once. That's just the nature of it, I guess. That was really great. I liked the talking heads bit over the credits, the thing, because they were talking about, hey, what's Canada got in common with Japan? It's like, they eat poutine, they like saying sorry. It was just like, I guess Japan would probably like poutine, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, they like mayonnaise like on similar, everything things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they like similar things, and I was just like, no, they'd be up for that.
The eye catch is animated as well. It's its own like little mini cartoon on the eye catch.
Like top to bottom, there's loads going on in this. Excellent.
Yeah.
It's a really like nice little thing. I was looking at it because it was like a cool looking skateboarding cartoon, but it's got so much substance to it as well. Comes off starting off and you're seeing all these like lovely boys about to go skating. It felt a bit like, oh, it's going to be like a bit like an Otome game kind of job. But no, it's got a lot more substance to it than that. It's director of fucking Free and did a Banana Fish as well. Which I know as well some of the character designs, some of the faces that looked like the character designs in that as well.
Hiroko Utsumi.
Utsumi, that's it. Yeah.
There's a lot of variance with the not only the physicalness of the character designs, but like the different styles that they have, which I really appreciate. When your man, the AI fucking dude, shows up on a fucking motorbike going like, come on, I'll take you to the finish line, kid. I was just like, oh my God, this fucking show. It's too cool, but it's having so much fun doing it, you know?
Oh, it's fun. Really, really fun. Nice. There's other things like out even this season about like surfing and the different kind of skating. But then this comes along as when eating their lunch before they even showed up. And it's a tough one because it was like, it's one I was going to look into, but I expect to stick around with it, so I go up to later, but it's just like, no, this is actually not better than I thought it was going to be, so now I want to keep up with it, keep on it.
I was quite high on it because I was like, oh, it's... I mean, I was looking forward to it because I'd seen the trailer. I was like, oh, this looks proper skateboarding. And then I was like, oh, it's Bones as well, isn't it? So it's...
Yes.
It's probably got a decent chance of being good all the way through.
Yeah, even if it drops it a little, if it has like episodes of this quality, I'm fucking fine with that. I did notice that Mr. Necro in the comments said it's Downhill Jam. That's the new sport. It's going to drive me crazy otherwise. that's what you call it when you're just trying to get down really quick.
Yeah,
I don't think they get points for like doing tricks in this though, but maybe that'll be later.
No, it's cool though. It's that the setting as well in Okinawa. There's like a big like custom car and racing scene there as well, which has kind of gone away a little bit because people can't afford to do that no more. But it's all that kind of transplanting that sort of tradition, but to a different wheeled vehicle and channeling that as well.
And it's still cool. It's super cool.
It's all about the execution, the presentation. It's it's really good. I'm gonna get that phone. Get some Tony Hawk on right now, man.
Yeah, okay, that might be it, because it resembles the first Tony Hawk game, and that was the Tony Hawk game I liked the most, when it was all this stuff, rather than free roam, open world skateboarding.
Maybe we're wrong and it's not just going to be about the contest, but I kind of hope it's about the levels and beating your opponents and that kind of thing. Yeah.
I'm sure there's some, that guy seems particularly evil.
I'm wondering how he's going to like take over the world with skateboarding and how skateboarders are going to stop him from this. I'm excited to see.
I wonder whether it's going to pull on that research people have done where about skateboarding being the first step that an area gets gentrified.
Ooh.
That would be interesting. That'll be a good one to do as well, because you have like these guys from like different walks of life, but they're all in the same community, and then this fucking big business guy coming in and going like, nah. I did like the way his like one of his random employees might be a character based off the design, like kind of goes like, no, you don't get to see his fucking bail, which eventually like I'm guessing the reveal we will get to see his bail, and it's going to be particularly embarrassing.
Yeah. And again, Okinawa is this place that's been informed by so many different traditions and cultures, including its original one, which it struggles to hold on to in the face of modern progress.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It writes itself.
It'd be an excellent theme.
Mm-hmm. Very interpretive of still present-day worries that they have there.
Yeah, that was all I could go for a big businessman skateboarder being the villain. Was the fact that they like big businessmen do like skateboarders, because they're... They're the first step towards an area getting gentrified.
I was thinking like your man in Hackers, where he's always like sketching to the
fucking meeting. The plague.
dear.
Next up, let's get back to some old friends. It's Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, Episode 14, BlizzBlaze General Flazzard. And we are still with Baduk, the old man who's fixing Dai's armor for him.
He's the greatest inventor in the kingdom, as well as the greatest swordsman.
And Mom's like, they're thinking about Hyunkel and like, if only I could have fixed that boy.
Yeah.
I only love one man. He's dead now. It's like, Pop's going, shit! Knew we should have gone for another chance.
Well, also, he's kind of like, he sees she's feeling bad, and he's also kicking himself for going like, oh, no, he's probably survived. You saw when we kicked his ass, he fucking survived that, so he probably survived all that lava. It's cool.
He probably did, because he got added into the shot at the end of the credits, so he's probably alive.
Well, I mean, like, there is dead people in that shot as well, so in the opening one where it shows, here's your heroes, this guy's dead.
They got revived spells in Dragon Quest, they can do this.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, they might just be sleeping for 13 years, like Haldar. So they're going to go and find Baduk decides, oh, we're going to find this old temple, because there's some signal flares there we can set off to.
Yeah, if we set off the red signal flare, that means like victory, everything's a-okay, and then they'll know it's like, oh, red signal flare, that means we can come back to the capital. But Dai goes like, all right, let me try that, because he's really excited to try his new trick when he was told, it's like, hey, you did that without the mark on your head. So he's like, all right, I'm going to put fire on my sword and slash the rocks away. And they're all like, no, 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 no.
Why did you pick fire? Why did you go for the ice or the lightning sword?
Yeah, it does off all the fireworks at once, which is just like, well, no, they won't have a fucking clue what's going on. So great.
Well, there's still no something's going on.
Through
Blue Soul Cave. So they've kind of made Dai feel bad for no reason at all. Because not like any of them could do that shit. So whatever.
And it turns out, yes, the flares were spotted by a balloon being ridden by Lady Amy, one of the Papnica Troika.
I was going to say, what was it, Troika? Trika?
Troika.
I couldn't remember the term.
They've been sent from the EU to audit your country's accounts and force you into austerity for a period of, 3 to 5 years.
We'll show them. We'll push our own country into a period of austerity for 30 years.
We don't need no hero, because they've got flaming magic swords now. So why do you say that, huh?
Watch how quick we can do it on our own. Pop's impressed, because she's not an old dude doing specifically that. She's a hot young thing. But obviously, badass warrior. Look, she's wearing the cool warrior crown and all that jazz.
Of course.
And they're like, oh, I'm going to meet a princess. I bet she's cute and adorable. And, well, and Di's like, well, she is cute, but in terms of her personality, she might be meaner than Mom.
And Mom's right there. Obviously, they're all in the balloon.
We got to lay off that a bit. I know, but that's, it's an order comic that's going to happen.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But let's Kakai Di going, yeah, I see her. She's all right.
He does admit that she's cute, like, straight up. He's like, no, I'm definitely, like, really interested in seeing her again because I'm absolutely in love with the princess. But, like, she's a bit abrasive, a little, you know.
It's just kind of funny that in this very short time, this little 10-year-old boy is more worldly-wise than Pop is in his, like, 16-odd years.
Yes, because it's Pop who gets the slap by saying, oh, she's worse than Mom. She must be a real ogre.
Dude, stop digging!
But then we see she's not. She's actually a very good leader as she's dealing with her underlings who are arguing over the rations.
And I'm going to fucking throw it out the window. If you guys, like, because if it's just bringing us strife, it's better off starving. Better off we live as humans than bicker like monsters among ourselves. And she's right. That's what the top guys and the monster guys do. They fight among themselves.
Yes. And we also meet Apollo and Marin, the other two parts of the Papnika Troika. And they're discussing all this, and then another voice is heard, and they look around the room, which is my favourite bit of the entire episode. This extremely long pan at the top of this tower as to who could have possibly said, oh, it's Flazard.
It's that man who's half fire, half ice. I don't know how we missed him.
Yeah, he's like 8 foot tall. I'm surprised we didn't see him standing in the corner glowing and making the room intermittently hotter and colder at the same time.
They just balances each other out and you don't notice the temperature change.
I feel like it should be uncomfortable at all times around him. Yeah.
Which I'm sure that long pad was deliberate because it was so funny when it finally hit him.
I am the ghost of climate change.
And they get into a fight and they lose.
He wrecks the guards, I like, by like heating and cooling their armor.
And then lining them all up science. For just one punch.
Yeah, I mean, like that was on the guards, I think, rather than his powers. And I did like the guy's like, okay, I'll shoot him with fire on the ice side. You shoot him with ice on the fire side, and it's like, okay, go.
Swap
and he's
hands.
Like, and your man has a cool shield, and he's like, cool shield, but guess what? I can do a fire spell 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. which is apparently very good because I guess you only tend to throw one at a time.
It's just for people on Barbarin. It's like when Go-Go-13's got to shoot through bulletproof glass, he just fires one bullet in the same place, and it keeps it breaks through it.
I feel like that's a D&D spell, shooting flaming things out of your fingers.
Magic missile.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a fire weapons. One. Yeah.
Oh right. Yeah, there's probably like elemental versions of it.
Yeah, kicks all their asses, and he's threatening Princess Leona. When all of a sudden, whoosh, gets hit by a knife with the Papnika sigil, that's it, on it. And dies here. Game on for next week.
That's pretty sweet. I presume he always knew how to do that and just never came up with it. So it's like, oh yeah, this just looks super cool. Right? And it's just very, whatink, a calling card.
Because this had come up earlier in the episode, as that was like his proof that he was the hero.
Are you Die the Hero? And he presents the knife and is like, that was a gift from the princess. Yeah. And she's like, oh, fuck, this is like from the royal family. Like, so, yeah.
Yeah, but you can tell, like, all the time she, in her head, it's like, he's awfully small. This can't be the hero. He's so tiny.
Like, he looks pretty badass. He's got the cool armor. He's got a bunch of cool scars. But he's very muscular for a small child.
He's condensed. He's very small but powerful, like a urinal kick.
He's pocket-sized for travel. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just still tons of fun. This is how badass Flazard is, but to still do it in a very appealing and cool way. And it'll be even cooler when he gets into a fight with an evenly matched opponent. Or, well, close to it at least. Yeah.
And have some, I assume we're going to have some fun fights based off that episode preview. The only notes I took this week was I wrote down Blizz Blaze and Flazard because they're so much fun to say. I said I wanted to see if they're fun to type. They are fun to type. It's great.
That's the Dragon Quest on a Man of Payers. It's just really nice that they kept that naming convention in this as well. And fun, it's fun rocketing along, you know. What it felt like it was like a bit of a break, or waiting for us. But just jump straight back in here. This is Flazard. We're going to fight him now. Boom. Done. So it's really getting the fuck back in there. No let up in it.
Which was a wait though was waiting for Detective Conan episode 993.
We didn't have to wait even a year this time.
That's true, only 3 months. Kyogoku Makoto, The Understudy, Part 1. In which, who is it? Sarah, Sunoko, Ran, and Conan have just been to see the Azengers, the Azengers movie.
Azengers Unlimited.
Where at the end of it, Carmen Yaiba joins the Azengers and they're laughing about the reason why. It was because to make the Azengers more popular in Japan. They're like, I can't believe they just came out and said it.
Yeah, I mean, they enjoyed the movie, but it was like, that's a bit too marketing.
Yeah, they were like, they were complaining why was the Japanese character shoved into it.
So yeah, corporate, then, you know, they just like reshoot these things and try and appeal to foreign markets. It's very deliberate and transparent.
And then you're once kind of saying, it's like, you know, I mean, like, you could be superheroes easily because, like, you're like the karate master. You've got, like, what is it? He's got 400. Yeah,
Snoko's basically trying to encourage, she's basically saying, Rad, you're like the best karate expert in this region of Tokyo. And Sarah, you're just as good at Jeet Kune Do, and my boyfriend here has got a 400-0 unbeaten record in martial arts.
The kind of narrows your thing is because you can only deal with martial arts based crimes then.
Well, yeah, but Conan's kind of thinking is just like, this isn't a comic book, it's an anime. It's like, it's not like you can just randomly like happen upon crime and then it's a woman screams, it's like across the street a woman's being mugged and has a dude has a gun to her head. So it's the perfect opportunity for your man to come in, just elbow him in the fucking head and take him out, to which the director yells, cut, who's this kid on my set? Because it was a film shoot that had no indication that it was a film shoot. Someone could have called the cops. That is very dangerous, lads.
You didn't get the location permit, so you gotta do a guerrilla style.
Well, spoiler, by the end of the episode someone will have called the cops because there'll have been a murder. So yes, the next segment of the episode is basically Sunoko and the director try to convince Makoto to replace the stuntman, and then eventually they'd like try to sweet talk him to actually join the cast of this TV program because he's so good looking.
Yeah, because they're just like, okay, he has to put the helmet on, the motorcycle helmet. We don't need to see his face. It's just like, yeah, he's actually really good at the martial arts. Also, like, he's a good looking kid. Fuck, have we just fucking stumbled on something great?
And they're like, what's the TV show? It's like, it's
like K-48 or something.
Yeah, KER-48, and it's like something like, it's a show about 48. There's so many characters. It'll be really easy to take a character out and put this guy in and no one will notice.
Yeah, and it's just like, so they like most of the cast have like weeks and weeks off and then they just pop in for one episode and then hop back out again. Good gig.
lots of super cynical Conan in this episode. And then basically the next part is introducing you to the victim, Sayo Tokozono. A actor who is a big old jerk. And basically,
like, again, it introduces all these guys. I love the way it says name, job, age. And it's just like, okay, you're all victims or fucking criminals. I don't know which yet. But yeah, this guy had it coming. He's just being a real dick to everyone around him. I think my favorite
pranks.
Was the director being shitty to him, where he was just like, this kid might have the moves, but it, like in acting, it's all about the look. And he pulls off the helmet. And it's like, oh my God, he's beautiful. And the director's like, yeah, we should kill off your character and put this guy on. He's like, fucking what? Just a lot of shitty sniping at each other in the, in the acting biz.
Anyway, he will be dead by the break. Our suspects will be Shigematsu Tomioka, the director. We've got his co-star, Nanako Jinmei. We've got the makeup artist, Hideka Aburai, and
the assistant director. So,
yeah, Daisaku Odori, and the production assistant, Yuta Hoge. And then shortly before he dies, it bombards you with a whole load of information that I wrote down.
God, yeah. Like, there's a lot here, and I was like, okay, I've seen the fucking things lining up here. That's interesting.
So there's a tether that the boyfriend's supposed to be getting himself put into for the stunt. He's going up there. I've written down glasses. I can't remember why I did that.
Because he's very specifically, hey, girlfriend, can you hold my glasses for
that's
me?
That's it.
I
so he can't see what's happening. Yes, it's basically so he's present, but he can't see who did
like,
the
what,
thing.
Whatever
yes.
happened behind him, and also he doesn't have the full use of his vision. Was he wearing the helmet at the time as well?
I think he might have been, yes, because he's got to put on the helmet. Yeah, the makeup artist, people keep on mentioning allergies playing up.
She's constantly sneezing very obviously, and the AD has a mask on and is coughing, and I was like, there's something there that means something. I don't know what yet.
Toka Zono's disappeared because he's looking for the phone for his main girl. So apparently he has multiple phones, one for each of the women he's seeing.
And his co-star, the other actor, she says, like, that's how what he does. He has a different phone for each woman, so he's using his other phone to call it and find it. And I think is it the director or the assistant director points out, is like, oh, were you fucking one of those phones? And she's like, fuck off, I was.
Probably the assistant director, because as we learn by the end of the episode.
He's so shitty. Oh my god, he's such a bastard.
He's clearly going to be dying in the next episode.
Yeah, he's up for the chop. Like, in these episodes seems to be jerks getting it, so, you know.
The camera angle at which they set the camera...
He's like at the right,
it's at the right angle, but not quite at the right angle to spot who did the thing.
And the other thing was like, whoever's in the frame couldn't have done it because they're on frame. And it's like, did they set that up and then stand in front of the camera? So that is just like, well, now I can't be convicted of the crime because look, you can see me here as he falls to his death.
Yeah, so they go. They call the cops. They go up to look. They're looking around. And all of a sudden, Conan and Sarah are in there as well, finding stuff on the ledge outside.
Yeah, because they're looking for the phone he was looking for in the room.
Oh, yeah, they ring the phone, don't they? And they hear it outside. They look outside, and Conan's on the fucking ledge grabbing the phone.
He's picking it up with like a handkerchief or whatever. He's not stupid. Yeah. As the kids say, it's like we are detectives as well, you know.
But that bit of writing of putting the handkerchief is there because of the bit later on when the assistant director, they think he's picking something up, and he says he's doing his shoe, like he's picking something up.
Yeah, for sure he is. Because the policeman's like, hey, don't remove anything from the crime scene. And he's like, no, I'm just tying my shoelaces.
Yes, don't touch anything until the forensics have been here. And that's why that bit with making sure Conan pick it up with a handkerchief, that's no doubt going to play later to do with that bit of evidence.
Because he picked it up with his hand, probably.
Yeah. So then they get back down and they watch the video. And this watching the video makes the assistant director break into an evil cackle.
When he sees your man splatting the fucking pavement. And he's like, sorry, just fucking... I was thinking of something funny.
Yes. And then he texts the murderer to let the murderer know that he knows they did it.
You see the murderer in shadow. I go like, oh, on his phone. And then the assistant director looking right fucking at him. And I was thinking like, were any of the potential suspects on the thing that he was walking away from? No, none of them were in the shot that he walked away from. And he looked immediately to his right, text the murderer. And so I was just like... I think except the director was standing in that scene before, so like that implies that it wasn't the director standing to his immediate right.
I don't know. I feel like it's the makeup artist.
Yeah. What do you got? Are you just suspect?
Just from seeing enough Conan episodes. That's all.
I was thinking she's supposed to be innocent, like kind of thing, but the other... apparently he played pranks on her. He played pranks on everyone, the actor. But... like when you see her and the actress interacting, like the actress seems really cool with her. It's like, yeah, she's my fucking guy. She's going to sort me out and everything. She's kind of waving her over.
There's more details is that one of the people who Toka Zono played a prank on before died in a car accident subsequently.
I mean, I get unrelated to the prank, but yes, they did.
Yeah, they
the last, and he specifically threatens the AD. He's like, there's a fucking nail here. It's like, I could have slipped on that and fell. The last fucking AD got killed. This kind of shit will get you killed. And it was just like, that's a fucking threat.
Yeah. I feel like the stuff with Nanako, the actress, about her being out of breath from doing her stunts, and then like one of the makeup cuts is a real cut. I think that's a red herring somehow.
I do, like, because it's too obvious, and even the assistant director points out, it's like, and she's like, I was out of breath because I haven't done an action scene in a while. She did the action scene because the director was eyeing up the girls that were really good at action, and he's like, they're all cute as hell. And she's like, I'll do my own fucking stuff. but your man, the assistant director, points out, it's like, you had a half an hour break between doing the action scene and this, so you shouldn't be out of breath. And she's like, fuck you, fucking, I was running down the stairs and shit. I feel like that's a red herring. Because it seems, and we see her get a prank from him in this episode where, what does he do?
Electric pen.
Yeah, he electrocutes her with a pen, going like, oh, my nephew's a big fan. And apparently he was mad at her because he saw her eyelash extensions, and he thought they were a caterpillar, and he's scared of bugs. Yeah. And I was like, okay, based off that in the preview, I know roughly how he died, or how he was startled anyway.
Yeah, the Conan's hint for next episode is medicine. That's the other reason why I think pills. It might be the makeup artist, because she's got, mate, somehow her allergy medicine might play into it.
That's a good point. I guess that would put the AD up as well, because he seems to have a cold or something.
Yeah, I like the way that it kind of led you to think the AD was the murderer, and then at the end it's like, oh, he's not the murderer, he just figured out who the murderer is, and he's going to blackmail them for some reason. Maybe because he's a massive jerk.
Laughs at footage of a man falling to his death.
I think this might be the first episode I've seen with Sunoko's boyfriend in. I think I've seen loads of episodes where he's referenced, but I can't remember. Did he show up in the one where they're on the school trip?
No, that was a different
Martial arts boyfriend. Yes,
funky hand boyfriend. It was a different one.
That's the kendo boyfriend, isn't it?
Yes, not the I couldn't think
karate
of the
boyfriend.
Yeah, completely different.
The one who looks exactly like Shinichi. It's Conan. It's good. It's a canon episode, so it's an interesting mystery, and it's going to be perfectly legit when you get the answer. It's not going to have pulled the wool over your eyes. I did like the animation's nothing to talk what write home about, but I did like all the angles they give the victim.
I think a lot of that's probably like bringing it off the manga, but you have these like solid shots to kind of work from, and the composition's quite good, but like the animation's like whatever. Yeah,
there's lots of shots of like up at him as like he's being snooty and looking down on characters as he's talking to them, which got him over as the kind of jerk. It reminded me a bit of later Murder, She Wrote, though, where half the episode spent making you dislike the victim. Let's find out whether they meant to kill them, or the reason they killed them was legitimate, or whether it was all a misunderstanding. That's probably the one thing you can point at Conan is going to that well a little too often, of somebody murdering somebody and then discovering the reasons they had for doing it were a mistake.
Yeah, so assuming it was the makeup artist, right? Maybe she was going out with the previous AD and he like fucked up so badly on set that he was driven to drink and he died in a car accident, or like, and she wants to get revenge on this guy. And I was just like, that could be it. I'm trying to construct an entire narrative of shit that I don't fucking know about.
That does sound like a likely plot for the
But he didn't actually drive him to drink. He was his fucking sponsor and he was trying to get him off the drink. Oh no, I've made such a mistake. Yeah.
Righty-ho, moving on to Healing Good Pretty Cure, episode 39, The Final Battle at Last, Fly to the Biogen Kingdom.
Yep. Choice went right in there. It's the ending.
Fuck's sake.
It's just like, try right in there, the ending is just like, they're in front of the town and getting a commendation from the mayor. It's like, thank you, Pretty Cures, for saving the day. And for you, Curious Sparkle, we give you a lifetime supply of tapioca balls and making bubble tea with. And she's like, whoa, whoa, what? Well, of course, Curious Sparkle. Of course, Hinata. Your obvious leadership qualities and stunning good looks are what got us this far. like, yeah. And it's just an attitude stream. It's like, yeah, I'm the best. Yes, yes. But really, they're worrying about, you know, in the real world, in the waking world, about what we're going to do, how we're going to beat this King Bjorgen, because he beat the queen and all of everybody else in the Heating Garden. It's just those little tykes, a little rabbit and a penguin and a cat to help you out. Can't be doing. Meanwhile, Guaiwaru, the big, muscly, stupid Bjorgen dude, is being super sus. It's like, you know, wondering where everybody's gone, trying to get them out of the way. Hey, I heard King Bjorgen asking how pretty you are and what he's admiring your nail polish over there. He was! I can't go over there right now. Like, so then he steps out of a dimensional portal and just walks around, leaves the door open. And the girl from upon is just like, hold on, that's a fucking door to the fucking Bjorgen kingdom like we were just talking about. He's obviously around here making some monsters and stuff, but he just left it open after himself. This is super trap. But if you go in there, we can finish off right here and now. And oddly enough, Peggy Tan, the little nervous penguin, is the most same one saying, yeah, let's go in there and fucking get him. End this once and for all, says the penguin. I suppose that's character development in his part. He's going to be the courageous, cool one. Mm. It's just like, it's a risky, but you got to take this chance. We can finish it off right here and now. Let's go do it. So they're jumping down there and there in Bjorgen, cartoon germ hell. It's just kind of fire and brimstone and kind of spiky caves. It's like, whoa, man. The poor little latte, the dog, is feeling a bit off all the time because she's surrounded by bad vibes, but she'll struggle on through it. And there are signs, you know, fucking saying like a fucking Looney Tunes cartoon, like saying, hey, this way. It's like, that's super sus.
Mm.
Okay, well, we should probably go this way then. There's not going to... No, that could be a double bluff because we might think that we're going to think that and that's just the right way to go. Oh, wow, but this is the wrong way to go. Utsumi will walk down and see if it's all right. Let's get down to the end. It's like, nothing doing. Guess it's safe to come by. Spike trap! Cha-cha! So they get a few more like that, but they're careful now. They kind of make their way down to the very depths of it. And it's just, okay, it's like... No one around. Like, is he fucking here? And then the big scary face. Because that's all you see, a big scary face in the sky with like no angry eyes and his mouth's going, bah, pretty curious, how do you get in here? I will destroy you. It's like, yeah, okay, let's get him. It's like, holy shit, he can shoot lasers at us, but he's just like a floating face. We can't actually get to him at all. We can manipulate the earth around them and make little like golems of himself, I suppose. And they're super tough. Can't take them on. Even the individual finish move won't do it, and they get smacked down. And he's having his moment of to gloat over them. It's like, you're just fucking three stupid little dumb magical animals. What could you hope to accomplish? You aren't even full grown yet. It's like, maybe he's right. Maybe we are stupid babies. It's like, no, you're not stupid babies. The girls are getting to her feet. He's trying to get you down because he's a tough customer right now, but you've gotten us this far. We've put into so many things. We're super good. This guy's a fucking bully. Let's kick his ass. It's like, yes, power of friendship. Wham, bam. We'll do this big super move with all four of us, nail him in the face. And so it takes him out. And they're going like, is that it? Did we win? And you're thinking as if you're, yeah, I know, funny. You couldn't go down that easy. There's got to be something more to this, right? But it's just like, he's not coming back. Not coming back. High fives, high touchy. They're like, oh, maybe we fucking did it. Yeah, yeah, all right. And over the hill comes Guaiwaru, strolls up. It's like, ha, ha, ha. Thanks so much, girls, for falling from my trap. It's like, wah, wah, wah. And next episode preview, you see him. He's wearing a crown. He's got the cape. He's punching them all up. So I guess by order of succession, the king is dead. Long live the king. And he's got all the powers. He's got all the authority. And he's going to go out to our reality. He's going to unleash a ton of monsters. Going to infect the world. It's a third spike, lads. Third wave of the infection. It's going to kill us all.
Hmm.
I'm hoping the precursor can deliver us from this existential dread next time. Hmm. But yeah, it's a matter of circumstance. If pretty gear trying to be made and having his episode run cut super short because of obvious circumstances and was trying to put some kind of a cap on it. It's a feel it's disappointing because I think there was some things, it was some teams was trying to be forced to capitalize upon, but it's had to kind of start itself again and again. Mm-hmm. And now they've kind of run into this wall now towards the end as well. We'll see if they might be able to put like a nice little button on it, but it's, you know, it's going to be a big asterisk next to his name. And it goes into the books here.
Yeah.
This is a bit of a shame, but hey, well, look forward to better times. It's like, let them see this one out and maybe we have another go at this, the Tropical Rouge Precure. But, you know, exciting stuff. But I suppose it means we're getting all the big climax, all the big, like, that should be a cool action sequence at least. Maybe I want the big emotional payoff you might have wanted, because I haven't had that time to maybe build that up as and pay off as I would like. But we'll see, you know. Let's have them have their day.
And then we've got One Piece, episode 957. Big news! An incident that will affect the Seven Warlords.
Oh, I did mention, I did like in Detective Conan that they were all like, Happy New Year! We're going to get to episode 1000 soon! Even One Piece isn't talking about that. But, yeah, they were very excited about it.
Yes, they were. and I guess we'll get that later in the year from One Piece. Yeah, so this is the bit between, is it Act 2 and Act 3 of Wano?
Yes, I think it's Act 2 starts after this.
Ah, okay. I can't remember. No, I think it's this 3 starts after this.
No, 3, no, because it's 3, it's the 9 of them marching off to meet their fate.
You're right, yeah. Sorry, I'm getting the numbering wrong.
Yeah, so we'll get the flashback and then we get the amazing Kinemon. What a great leader you are. You've mastered this. What an incredible plan you had. before we get to that, though, we've got to check in with everybody else in the world and find out what's going on. Sabo, dead. I forgot about that. Definitely dead. Happened off panel.
Totally. Oh, yeah. He's tossed. Yeah. That sucks. Everyone's really caught up about it.
Everyone going, I just learned he was alive again. He's already gone again. I said, oh, man. Only the good die young.
And also, well, apparently all the other people who are also breaking into the seat of the world government. All gone. Definitely never going to see them again.
All those characters you only saw for like 5 minutes in the chapter that last appeared in. No, you didn't even get to know them. They're toast. Yeah, just forget about it.
So it's either Vivi or Cobra has been killed.
Something's happened because that's
like it's something happened, something terrible happened. Then we kind of cut to Alabasta and there's a bunch of the people like crying and stuff, and someone going like, oh, Vivi, says Shirayoshi, and because it could be like, oh, Vivi, your dad died, or oh, Vivi, you died. You know, it's just like we don't know.
Yeah, because Garp himself goes to the fish man kingdom.
Yeah, he was escorting them back and he said he'd stay for a cup of tea. And also, I gotta tell you a thing that happened while we were on the way.
Don't let this colour your view of humans. And then we go backwards in time to Morgan's, and that's where we're getting the Sabo information, and there's been a death and something else happened. We learn that Sabo is the death, presumably by the reaction after this.
I think the other thing is like there's a big thing's been voted on. Obviously, we do find out what that's about. And he's just like, oh, this is great. Both of these are really good top news. It's like, we run two front pages. One on the front, one on the back. Yes. Just fucking go with it. And everyone's like, yes, sir.
Except for one guy who's like, I can't let you do this. I'm from Cypher Pole.
Well, he does. He presents the information from the world government. He is from the world government. And he's like, oh, you want me to fucking do some information manipulation? No problem. Wow, that's a good price. Wait. Cover up both those things. The two biggest news stories of the year. Fuck you.
Take your money. I don't want it.
And that guy tries to kill everyone in the press office, and a seagull beats the shit out of him. So that's great. Man, fucking much knowledge I want a J. Jonah Jameson comic. I also want a comic about fucking Morgan's. He's
well, yes, because J. Jonah Jameson doesn't have a really long neck, which he can move his head about.
Yeah, he's funnier looking, and that helps.
And then their giant kettle on a balloon takes off, and they run away from the world government.
So has he eaten the seagull's eagle fruit, and he can command all seagulls, and that's how he's been delivering papers all this time?
Possibly.
Possibly.
And he has all the powers and strengths of a seagull. He's as strong as seven seagulls.
I would assume thematically it's an albatross.
Probably, yeah. But maybe like seabirds is what he is.
Yeah, big bird, yeah.
Seabird fruit.
Albatross type.
Yeah.
And then we get all like the people reacting in Alabaster and the revolutionaries and Sabo's shitty brother and Dardan.
I was going to say Sabo's shitty brother, Luffy. And I was like, no.
Yoda's shitty brother.
Yes. And Doflamingo laughing it up in his cell. And Teach getting all happy. And then we get cut to current times. Drake, ring, 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 ring. Hello, Kobe. I'm spying for the Marines.
Colonel, this is Drake.
Things are going really bad here.
So you know the way I was, you know the bad news that like Kaido and Big Mom have joined forces, and it's just like Kaido and Big Mom have joined forces. Shh, we're doing secret spy shit. Oh, sorry, I'm Kobe. I'm part of the secret squad too, but I'm in Marine place, not pretending to be a pirate. What's the worst thing that's happened? What possibly could be worse than that? Yeah, Cyber Paul are here. So that's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also, Kobe no longer wearing shirts.
why would you when you're that fucking shredded? Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's true. Eventually.
Training long and hard for those muscles.
And eventually, like, when you know he's going to be at his toughest, when he does the thing, like he said, now, of wearing the jacket, but not wearing the sleeves and no shirt. That's the most badass you can be.
That's like one wiper went all the way with it. You could even argue Teach because he's always got his shirt open. You
know, yeah, but he's nothing to show off.
He's got a big old hairy chest.
That's confidence he had. That's why
I worked very hard at getting this spherical, goddamn.
fucking shonen manga rule that you can wear whatever the fuck you want when you're a big enough badass.
And then we get everyone's reactions to the big news that the Seven Warlords are being disbanded. And then we get a recap of what the Seven Warlords are and why they needed to be disbanded.
So, basically, right, you got is it the three or four most powerful pirates on the sea that the government can do nothing about?
Yeah, the emperors, they can't do anything about.
Can't do anything about. So they set up the warlord system where it's like, we'll give you like this little fiefdom, you do as much fucking crime here as you like, we won't fucking touch you, and that'll kind of keep all the pirates at bay.
Well, they're not even supposed to do that, though, are they? They're supposed to do stuff for the government. And
yeah, they're supposed to do, like... Stuff
they weren't supposed to be taking over Arabasta. They weren't supposed to be taking over Dressrosa.
You have a high position, so yeah. you don't need to take over shit, but they all use it to take over
Crocodile shit. Was doing his undercover.
Yeah.
And the only reason Don Quixote Doflamingo is getting away with it in Dressrosa is because of his birth. The others would not be able to get away with it in the same
and it describes several things of like Law was fucking retired because he attacked another fucking warlord that's bad. Blackbeard did what the fuck he needed to do and then retired. Jinbei fucking retired in disgust. And it was just like, yeah, this is a bad system. Like, everyone's like fucking retiring or doing fucking
disappeared.
Crimes underneath it.
Disappeared.
Yeah. Well, they class them as they're meant to be a deterrent to other pirates. And what happens when you stockpile a lot of deterrents is that, well, you find that the other side is going to stockpile out their own deterrents to deter you from using your deterrent. And as well, you've got your fucking guys and you don't mind that they're involved in fucking violent regime change and cover-ups and smuggling and all that. As long as it's in service of this and doesn't mess up our operations, we're fine with that.
Yeah, they're not entirely like against it, but it's like you did try and take on one of the kingdoms of the world, Crocodile. We got to put you in prison. Yeah,
and you picked that one.
Yeah, like that's one of the big ones. That one gets
the
a
one,
seat at the
as
big
we
meeting.
Learn, yes,
like,
the one who, but also the one whose hereditary goes back to the original 20 families who formed the world government.
Yeah, it's a big thing. Oh, that was the other thing. This thing came along because Nefertiti Cobra and what's your man's name from?
I can't remember what his name is.
I can't remember that king's name. Yeah, both those kings had a speech where we've both been fucked over by the system really goddamn bad, and everyone else was like, "Oh, that's a good idea. We should get rid of that." Yeah, it's the one thing they could agree on at that fucking meeting.
Yeah, this is all the plot of. Fujitora, isn't it? It was Fujitora's idea to get this done. Maybe we'll discover in the past that he was fucked over by an earlier Seven World.
Or another system around. Similar. Yeah.
If there's any room for that flashback at any point. Because, we haven't had his flashback yet. We haven't had the other ant. We've barely met the other guy. And so yeah, we get the, so it's like the tale of corruption, and then we get the reactions of the remaining members who are not as corrupt. Because Mihawk essentially just did what he was told, which was bust up other pirates because he likes getting into fights. I guess Boa Hancock...
Like, he's delighted when the fleet shows up on his island's door and he's like, it's been a long time since I was the one being chased.
Yes. Boa Hancock's...
fucking class.
Yeah, she's basically like, oh, let's show these fuckers why...
They've forgotten one important thing, Margaret. We got this position because we are strong. Yeah. And it's just like, I'm going to fucking kick all of their asses, basically.
Yeah, basically, that's the thing. You took us under your wing because you couldn't deal with us anymore. So,
Kobe's going to take care of her. I am assuming he's going to arrest her or she's going to kill him. That's absolutely what will happen. Or they won't team up.
They'll both bond over their love for Luffy.
Or will they fight over their love for Luffy?
That's true. I'm a big fan of his as well. Weevil asks his mum's permission to fight these guys.
Because he doesn't understand, I thought we were friends.
Yeah. And then Buggies is the best reaction.
Buggies is great, of course.
Because he's got into this position by pure accident. And therefore... He basically sacrifices.
This was his retirement plan. He wasn't going to do any crimes after this.
It. Yeah, he was just going to rent out pirates to people. Basically does a stirring speech to all his men, and then him and his crew are just going to leg it.
Yeah, while you guys are fighting the Marines that have my island surrounded, I'm going to fucking run.
Good plan. I love Buggy. Can't wait for him to show back up again in the story.
So no one's going to remember him. He's a dude who turned up in the boat by Tama.
Oh, I'd love it.
Jesus, what if?
Reinforcements. Oh, Buggy.
It would just be Buggy. He'd be Mr. Three and... what's her name?
Alvida.
Alvida, yes. The first character to get the massive makeover. But at least she had an explanation. She had a devil fruit.
Your man with the sword, I'm guessing, is still pretty okay with a sword. The lion and the lion tamer both got really fat, so they're not going to be much good. how did you both get overweight, lads? Come on.
Next week, all the Marines reacting to all this nonsense.
This episode, I think you were saying it, Brian, this could be just done with clips of stuff we've already seen. But they just really went the extra mile and it looks so fucking good.
It is. The stuff with... I mean, the Morgan stuff's great. I was like, the Morgan stuff's great. And then I got to the bit where they're explaining the Seven Warlords. I was like, this is above and beyond what was necessary. And it is so cool.
Yeah, just the individual sizzle reel for each of the Warlords. It's just this is them and now doing the thing.
It's like the way it'd be a still, but then one character will animate out of the still. And
so good.
Cut turn to camera.
This dude makes zombies and you control shadows. And he's got a full Tim Burton vibe going on. He's Gecko Moria. He's the Seven Warriors of the Sea.
It's the cool kind of animation I expect the character to do at the start of introducing them when you pick them in a fighting game. That kind of fucking thing. I'm just like, yeah, it's fucking cool. What's their deal? It would definitely get people pumped if they hadn't seen it before. It's like, all of this looks cool as shit, because it is cool as shit.
It's also worth bearing you in mind that it could have been literal years since you've either read and see about these characters or seen these characters. So you may need to remember where they are positioned in this web of treachery and deceit.
Which is why it needs to re-explain, I think three different fucking things that the government runs the world with. And it's just let me explain this thing, because we haven't needed to bring it up in a long fucking time.
And there's so many accents in the Wano, and it's kind of going on. It's isolated in the sphere away from all of these developments as it is, because what is fucking going down there? And it's big news. The world is still turning outside here, and it's fucking turning on its head by the looks of things.
It's not only reaction, it's also a little bit of a flashback to more exciting adventures of Garp when he was a young man, probably in his 40s or something.
He's 29 years old. He's almost hitting retirement age.
Riku Doldo III is your your other fella's name. Rebecca's granddad, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Dude, yeah.
And then finally, Kimono Jihen, episode 1, Kabane, in which a guy with hair over one eye investigates mysterious monsters going on in the countryside of Japan.
But wait, Brian, that sounds a lot like, oh.
Yes, Muishi.
Like, I think the only problem I have with this show is when he says, hey, little kid, I just got to do this one time. Let me show you my butt. And I was just like, oh, no, buddy.
I'd already figured out he was a monster as well.
Oh, yeah, but I just, like, that phrasing was just like, oof, yeah.
I mean, he was like, this might sound weird, and I'm only going to do it the once, but I need you to have a look at my butt.
Yeah. Again, phrasing, it's a little weird.
It was easier to say, I'm going to show you a tail. Arrested, yes.
Right. I know it's just the way the inn is drawn, but still, like, you know, like, it's sending, like, a young boy in there to scrub your back. That's just an extra perk of the place, but it's just like, you sure you want to be letting your sons go in there? And
well, I guess the kid strangers. Offered because he's hoping this mysterious Tokyoian will take him to Tokyo and away from this humdrum country life. Like, he's the one who offers this. Yeah, I did like the way his hair was even a different color to make him like, I'm the main character. Where it's like his smile looks shitty the entire time. It was well done.
Yeah, he's a massive. I mean, he's clearly obviously Kitaro is the source, as it is for Mushishi. Yes. But there's a degree
as it is for like a million things.
There's a degree of Sanji to him as well, in terms of the way he smokes.
He just smokes like a cool guy.
Yeah, or a guy who thinks
yes,
cool
as well. That's a waistcoat and trousers and shirt combo in those colors, which I've seen on fucking Tiger and Tiger and Bunny,
yes.
In Doppo, in Bungo Stray Dogs, in fucking what's his face, the Cyclops Pfizer lawyer from fucking Godo from Ace Attorney. Since we're like,
You reach
a certain anime character age and you become like a dad, but you're a cool dad, so you wear this exact costume.
I guess the difference is he has the hair that's underneath the sunglasses some fucking how, and he also has like a huge fucking amount of hair. That's an impressive thing. That must take a lot of conditioning.
I think it's to like emulate the give you the idea that he's got a tail before we literally see that he's got a tail.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what they're going for. Well, so, that he showed him his magical balls, huh?
Well, yeah.
But the tail is kind of like a little droopy ball sack as well.
It's not a good tail to look at, no, for sure.
Magical tail as well.
Yes, it turns out the reason he's a tanuki is the reveal. But yes, he's been called in because there's the decaying animals keep on appearing. Is it on a full moon in this?
It's the new moon.
That's it.
So like a moonless night, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, the owner of this inn has called him in to investigate because he investigates this sort of stuff.
He's a strange things investigator. Basically, because I think strange is in the thing, but like a paranormal investigator.
Yes, yeah. He's a John Constantine type. If John Constantine
he's not as acerbic.
Brought in a load of orphans.
Yeah, which that's a different character than
it is.
Yeah, he sort of turns out to be sort of like yokai social services. He's going around trying to track down all of these half human, half yokai children who've been left parentless and bring them in before they cause trouble or get into trouble.
Yeah, because
he can use them to fight crime as well.
He ends up being more fascinated by one of the boys working at the inn. He's called Kabane, but they just call him by his very rude nickname.
Karabanbo, it's the yokai about the farmers who died tilling their fields, and then their vengeful spirits are angry that the fields are being left untended.
I thought they were going for the name because it kind of sounded like Kitaro.
Dorotavo.
That's it. And they make him work the fields because his BO is so bad, so they don't want him working in the inn.
And the mother's disgusted by him, and the kid's just like, hey, kid, we're going to see this cool guy from Tokyo. You don't fucking follow us. And he's like, okay, no problem. I'm just going to work in the fields.
And this is the nephew of the inn owner. Inagami, the detective, asks for Kabane to attend to him while he's staying at the inn, and they bond, and then he discovers that he is a half ghoul. When the son of the owner tries to take the pendant.
Because earlier in the thing, like he said, "Hey, do you mind? Oh, that's an interesting pendant. Do you mind if I have a look at it?" It's like, okay, the parent had left you, but this obviously didn't abandon you. This is a thing of protection. But he asked for it and was given it, whereas the nephew like snapped it off him. And I was like, I assume that's the difference. Like,
yeah,
giving it is different than taking it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he half turns into a he's a literal half ghoul in that half of him is a ghoul.
Mm.
When that stops protecting him from turning into such a thing, and he's worried that it's me who's been killing the animals, and he's like no, because you've got that pendant that's stopping you from turning.
It doesn't happen on a full moon. It happens when you take off the pendant. You don't take it off when the fucking moon changes.
Yeah. Mm. So I'm gonna go find it. They find some dogs which have been turned, and then they find the culprit, which is this elk with fantastic antlers which look like a skull.
And it gave us human teeth as well. Yeah. It's weird.
Sticking human teeth on an animal is either hilarious or terrifying, always. Yeah.
You know when Princess Mononoke, when the forest god comes out and turns into that weird face, same reaction, but it's really more unsettling this time.
And they're repeatedly telling you, the way you kill them is you cut their... You can't kill them, but where you disable them is by cutting their heads off. Which I love that first time he's explaining that, and then Kabane is like, "Oh, you just hold that there. I'll get rid of its head in a moment." And Kabane, by the time he's finished that sentence, Kabane's chopped the dog's head off with an axe.
He's twisted its neck 180 degrees around and then chopped it off. He went for the double tap on him.
And I did like your man like showing his powers. Besides showing his butt tail, he forms his index finger into a gun, and then he like holds the gun the rest of the way, so he's using his middle finger to pull the trigger and everything. And I was like, that's a neat look. I do like the visual of that.
And then Kabane takes care of the ghoul by ramming his fist down
your
the
man shoots
throat.
Like halfway through the deer's neck, and he punches it in the mouth, inside the mouth,
and then just pulls it off.
It's just like slicking the freaking the spit of it off. It's like, oh, that works too, right? And your man's like, yep, good job, kid. You saved your cousin. But earlier in the episode, he asked him based on the pendant. It's like, yeah, do you ever want to meet your parents again? And the kid's like, I don't really know. I never really thought about it. And he has to ask it him again here because he's like, hey, wasn't just hired to kill this monster. The innkeeper hired me to kill you because she figured, this monster kid is doing it clearly. So, do you want to see your parents again? And he's kind of smiling and just like, no, you should just kill me. And he's like, okay, blap. That's the bad ending.
But because it's repeatedly told you the only way ghouls can die is by having their heads removed, and that doesn't even kill them; it just disables them. Because he's then on the phone to somebody as he's heading home back to Tokyo about somebody.
I thought the kid was in the boot of his car, his cool Cadillac, but he's actually just in the backseat.
Yeah, because he's on the phone to somebody about, he's like explaining where he's left the body and you need to go and dig it up or bury it. He's basically trying to get somebody to do the favour they owe them to get rid of this body.
Mm-hmm.
Who I assume we'll eventually meet that character as well, based on the fact that the credits don't just show monster children. There are other monsters who are actual adults.
Mm-hmm.
He's woken up and he's like, oh yeah, that's all right. You're sort of dead. They believe you're dead.
Also, you are a dead monster. Yes. So like me shooting, like you're still dead. You're still undead. That's how you work. You're a zombie monster.
You're fine, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And takes him to the office.
To the office / bar.
Yeah,
That's a cool look. I do like their Tanuki Starbucks fucking logo. That's pretty fun.
Gives him some new clothes, which are clearly some other character's clothes that he's just taken out of the laundry.
Here, wear this Halloween costume.
Well, in fairness, the other two children's costumes are kind of indicative of what they probably are as well. When they come in saying, "Oh man, what a rough day. Hey, Nagami, can we get some pizza? Oh man, I'm hungry. Hey, who's this then?"
Oh, you didn't get another kid, did you?
And some kind of half, I was assuming it was a half spider boy, and very obviously Yuki Ona come in after him.
Could you not make like the boy the ice one or something?
It's Yuki no, Ona. It can't be a Yuki. Yuki Otoko.
I believe they're both boys.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So he's adopting all boys as well. That's a bit weird. Weird on top of the weirdness that was already there.
Yeah, it's the usual mistake of mistaking a Yumi Murasaki's voice for being a girl's voice. He just plays boys who sound like girls. And Bananias. Mm. He also plays Bananias.
This was pretty good. Good starting episode. I liked a lot of the design stuff. I'm curious as to where they're going to go with it. Not the strongest first episode that we saw this week, but like still pretty good.
It had a little bit of that kind of Sam Raimi Evil Dead sort of vibe I got from the beginning bit of Demon Slayer before it goes into the full you're in a team, you fight with swords, use all the moves, blah blah blah. That's probably just been the particular scenario that they're in, but I hope it kind of keeps that mood a little bit in other things. And now it also has moved to like an urban location where I presume a lot of the cases are going to be from now on. You know, it's like a Kitaro-esque, you know, that kind of supernatural procedural thing in its own way, probably a bit more graphic than Kitaro is. You know, you have the disemboweled dogs and stuff running around.
And tearing off multiple heads, so...
I was like, is it supposed to be like a boys detective club type thing with all these
all the kid characters
all the kid characters helping out an adult detective?
Well, there's a thing you mentioned, like a lot of monsters have been having babies with humans lately, so I've decided to gather them into one super team. I don't know,
come to me, my yokai.
Yeah, exactly.
I quite enjoyed it. I'm just wondering what on earth I'm going to watch because I don't have the time to watch all of these things every week.
Yeah.
And there's there's Dr. Stone. I know everyone says Wonder Egg Priority is great, but I get the feeling that it'll be a thing where I'll look at it and I'll go, yeah, that's technically very good, but I'm not sure I'll enjoy it.
I might look at it and see how it comes out. Overall, that's one of those things where I can very easily flip one way or the other, and it's being done by their experienced staff in their own way. But this is for a bunch of them. This is their first time in a directorial role or so on like that. So I want to see what goes on. The scriptwriter for those is mostly this is his first thing in animation. He's always done live action dramas enough for Fuji TV. So. The danger there is, though, it sounds like, you know, it could get very maudlin very easily, but...
Yeah, that's what I was looking at the description. I was like, flip-flappers all over again.
I fell out of flip-flappers for different reasons, but yeah. There's so many other fun shows, I'll probably be more tempted by them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess of the things this week, there's only five full-length things that are regular, because I'll hop off Conan again once he goes back to filler.
I'll
probably hop off One Piece again, but I don't know, I'm kind of tempted to watch the flashback for Odin.
Yeah, that is tempting.
I feel watch enough of it to you get to hear the voice, and
that's true. Yeah. I know, because if I want to hear the voice, I can just play Pirate Warriors 4 now, because he's the final piece of DLC is Odin. That'd be five, and our Dr. Stone, that's six. That's probably enough, because the Bungo Stray Dogs one is only 10 minutes long, so
okay.
It's not a full length thing,
but that's even more now.
Yeah,
they're not trying to stretch it out needless.
What if it's 10 minutes of fucking novel, though? Huh? What about then?
Well, I just won't watch it. It's the same as I always do when I hit a light novel.
Wait till the good stuff happens. Yeah.
But I suspect it's not. I suspect it is. I watched a little bit. It was basically, I didn't get to the actual part of it, which was the super deformed fellas. But it was all like presenting it as if it was a serious episode at the start. And then presumably the punchline of this po-facedness was going to be gotcha, it's a goof around, we're having a good old time. Yeah, so hop off Osamatsu, I think.
Yeah. I did watch it this week just to fucking see, and I was laughing at bits, and I was like, oh, this is funny, presented back to me, and also I'm remembering that episode, that was really good. And then it got to the second season, and I was in the second half of it, and I was laughing less, and I was like, so that first season was just really fucking solid, so much that I stuck around for two more fucking seasons.
I think this, like, look bad at it later, it'll still be there. I mean, I haven't watched the fucking film, the guy opened there either.
I did
touch the film, because I was like, my fear with the film was that it was going to be a feature length version of all the bits I didn't like about season two. None of the stuff I liked about season one, and all the stuff I didn't like about season two. And now I will say, the stuff I don't like about season three is different stuff to what I didn't like about season two.
So at least it's changing.
At least they change things up. Mm-hmm. And of course, with a dog and a cat, every day is fun. Is back, and I'm hopping off with Jujutsu Kaisen for myself. But feel free, you guys, carry on telling me about it.
It's not like we're spoiling any parts of it for you. Yeah.
And then the next thing on my queue on Crunchyroll is Haybot. So that's definitely
I can't give up my third rewatch of that now. Really, I mean, that's just one reason.
It's because I was looking up. I was trying to find which episode had got the Xbox 360 as Hal, and it's episode 9. Haybot becomes a baby.
It'll make sense maybe when you watch it.
Haybot has grown tired of taking care of the spoiled Nijiru, and after seeing an ad for a deluxe baby doll on TV, decides to turn himself into a baby.
There you go.
Haybot fans, I guess Haybot fans already know that. People who've never seen Haybot, that may be encouragement enough for you to hop on. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week. But what day will it be, Niall?
What the hell is this? Hey, come back. Emoji button, get the fuck out of here. Tuesday the 19th. Tuesday 19th, yeah.
Okay. Tuesday 19th. We'll be back here then. So, YouTube viewers, we'll see you again next week on Tuesday. Podcast listeners, you'll probably hear this podcast when I put it up on Tuesday, because I'm currently putting it up the same days that we do the next podcast.
Podcast listeners, we're always thinking about you. Your thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, the podcast listeners get an extra week of before being spoiled. So
that's correct. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to hear this podcast before you're currently hearing it, why not watch it on YouTube?
That's really confusing.
You can see our beautiful faces in this video. 33% less beards than previous weeks, because my beard is gone.
Oh! Still here, thank goodness.
Oh, Jesus, give me a fright there.
It'll slowly be back again next week and over ensuing weeks. It just got to the length where I was annoyed by it.
I had a COVID nightmare where I dreamt I trimmed my beard like so it looked really dumb, but in my sleep I reached up and put my fingers through my beard and I was like, oh, thank God. And I just went back to like proper sleep.
No, I've only had one COVID nightmare, and that was I dreamt I was at a con, and then we were at Warwick University, it was at the pub at Warwick University, and we were all in the pub, and then I was like, hang on a minute, we shouldn't be here.
There's no social distancing whatsoever. No,
everyone get out of the pub.
I heard one where I was like an international, like, jewelry or something, that I was breaking into this fancy house, and then I was like already in the window, I was creeping around, but this isn't my house. I shouldn't be in here. And I went back out the window again.
That's more fun. Okay. Tell us, listeners, what's your COVID nightmare?
Answer the postcard to this address. Coming up.
Radio. That's the end of the podcast. Podcast stream. Podcast stream. Goodbye.
Bye. Good night.